In the midst of this global crisis, the voices for justice are revealing what really matters. It is time for Planetary Makeover. Here we feature solutions and modern miracles in documentary videos that offer hope for our future and remind us all of our spiritual source. Long ago, it was forecast that at this time in history, extraordinary teachers, including the World Teacher, would emerge to help us as we build a world that works for everyone. Now, here's your host of Planetary Makeover, Mr. David Minot.
Welcome to another episode of Planetary Makeover. This time, we are positing the age-old question, what if the Buddha or the Christ returned? And as always, we are not here to convince you of anything. We simply ask that you approach the material presented here with an open mind and consider that we can create a new civilization based on trust, sharing, brotherhood, equity, justice, love, and all the rest of it. And while this may seem like an improbable future, the truth is, we also assert that mankind has help and assistance of an extraordinary kind. These, of course, are the World Teacher Maitreya and his group, the Masters of Wisdom. They have been predicted by the world's religions for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. However, now that they have emerged, we find that they are not religious figures per se. They are non-denominational, and they're here for all of humanity, not belonging to or beholden to any particular religious or philosophical sect. The Christians expect him as the Christ, the Jews as the Messiah, the Muslims as the Imam Mahdi, the Hindus as Kalki Avatar, and the Buddhists as Maitreya. They got the name right. However, this figure, Maitreya, does not belong to any one of those groups. He belongs to you and me, to us, the people. And that's all they are beholden to. And they love everyone unconditionally, from the most fervent fundamentalists to the atheists and the agnostics. Two groups, or three groups, who probably would be least likely to believe in a world teacher. Though when Maitreya and the Masters emerge, we don't have to worry about belief because we will have the proof in front of us. And then we can decide whether or not that has the ring of truth for us and makes sense to us. Now, Maitreya is an avatar himself and will be wielding incredible energies that have never been handled quite this way on this planet before. And that's also in part because he himself is overshadowed by great avatars, like the avatar of peace and equilibrium, of synthesis, and a third energy for yet we do not have a name. And they are helping us, the Masters, move out of the age of Pisces and into the age of Aquarius. The last 2,000 years has been the age of Pisces, inaugurated by the historical figure we know of as Jesus, where humanity learned both individuality. We came out of the herd, whereas before that we weren't really thinking very much except for the leaders, and also idealism. Now, those concepts have been well learned and gone a little too far. Individuality has become selfishness and greed, and idealism has become fanaticism. So it's time to move on. The new age, the age of Aquarius, is about the things I described earlier. Synthesis, for example, instead of just democracy at one end and socialism at the other, we'll have democratic socialism, social democracy. and synthesis, as I said, love, brotherhood, justice, ecological restoration, and so on. Now, there are many writings available about Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom. In most recent times, beginning with the late 19th century, we have Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society. Moving on to the 20th century, Helena Rodrich, Alice Bailey, and Benjamin Krem, who actually bridged the 21st century. Ben only left us in 2016. These writings by both the authors and esotericists that I mentioned and the masters themselves are designed to stimulate our minds and our intuition without infringing upon our free will, which to the masters is sacrosanct. Now, in this episode, since we're dealing with such a heady topic, they started off by interviewing people on the street at random and members of Share International, some of the veteran volunteers. Share International was founded by Benjamin Krem, and its purpose is to elucidate the teachings of the masters and to educate humanity about them and about their emergence. Now, it would be easier for humanity to understand this if we hadn't been presented with such a distorted view in the past. Of course, the Christians expect the Christ to appear descending on a cloud over Jerusalem on Judgment Day at the end of the world, and the Muslims expect the Kalki, not the Kalki Avatar, that's the Hindus. They expect the Imam Mahdi to appear in the center of the world, which to them is Damascus, on a horse on Judgment Day, when he will say, "I have come, give me clothes, give me bread." Now, both of these ideas are beautiful images, but they're mystical. And the masters are not mystics. We're the mystics. We mysticize everything. And the truth of the matter is much more down to earth and much more beautiful and mind-blowing, in fact. And this is some of what will be discussed during the video. And so we hope you enjoy that, and we will see you again soon. Thank you.
With the world in such need, with millions starving to death in a world of plenty, humanity certainly could use some help in coming up with a plan to assure peace and the end of hunger. Some say it's in the stars, that we are at the end of one great age and at the beginning of a new age, and that this is the time for the return to earth of a great divine being. What if the Buddha or the Christ returned now to help us out of the mess we are in? What if it really happened?
I think it's going to happen within our lifetime.
We heard some rumors coming out of London that there's a man there who's a political and social leader who's talking about brotherhood and sharing all the resources of the world and ending starvation, and I think something like that could happen. A person like that could come into the world.
I think it's possible.
So what do you think? If somebody like that came into the world and everybody, you know, like TV and everybody interviewed him and people realized who he was, what do you think would be the first thing he would do?
He would probably try to get all the leaders of the countries to get in one meeting and try to agree on one plan.
Do you think that that's possible, that that rumor might be true?
No, I think he just sounds like another racketeer. I mean, religions are basically just big con games, and I think that if God really did exist, we'd just have to abolish him. People can't become free as like some gift that's given to them from above.
I think it'd be great. That's something that's needed, because America itself it's not a united, I don't see it as a united country, because, you know, there were so many separate states and there's so many different things going on in each state. And I think if there was some, you know, powerful person who could bring all of us together and, you know, educate the people who are not educated, then that'd be perfect.
Frankly, I don't see much hope. I used to be more optimistic. Now I feel that the possibility, the best possibility, is a considerable amount of catharsis, a great deal of suffering, which may perhaps allow the survivors to rethink and reconstruct better than we did.
I don't know. He might be rubbed out immediately because he would present such a threat to the current power structure. He would represent such a threat to the current governments and politicians that they would just get rid of him immediately. If he survived, actually, and if he was very careful, he might actually begin to affect some kind of change. I haven't heard of this man that you're referring to, but Gandhi was certainly an example of that. I think he tried to lead people towards discovering themselves, towards a little bit more self-consciousness, rather than just using them for his own purposes.
I would be grateful that something like this was finally happening, because I mean, I think it should have happened a long time ago, and that, you know, and if this guy had been around 40 or 50 years ago, he wouldn't have had nuclear weapons at all.
The coming of a Christ, a world teacher, into the world is, of course, a tremendous climactic event with enormous repercussions.
Just let me say that what I say as an outcome of my own personal experience, and what I say I do with total conviction of its truth. But I assure you, I present it to you not as dogma, but for your consideration only. If it appears to you to be right, reasonable, logical, if it has for you the ring of truth, then by all means accept it. Otherwise, not. And quite honestly, I don't mind whether you accept it or not. Luckily for me, my role is simply to present the information, thereby creating a climate of hope, of expectancy, into which the Christ can emerge without infringing our human free will. If you find it difficult to accept, and there may be among this audience, I had some indication of it outside, a number of people of the more orthodox, more fundamentalist persuasion. Just let me say that the one I'm talking about, the master of all the masters, I submit to you, is now with us once again in the world, as he was with us in Palestine when then he worked through his disciple Jesus.
The Buddhists have got the name right. The personal name of the Christ is Maitreya, the happy one. One foretold 600 years before the manifestation of the Christ in Palestine by Gautama Buddha, to come now, the dawn of this age, the cycle, which is just beginning, to take humanity into a golden age, to restore the spiritual basis of life, and to show humanity the way through joy, through love, to manifest its innate divinity. He called him, as St. Paul called him, the teacher alike of angels and of men. So 2,000 years ago, the Christ manifested himself as Jesus for 3 years. This time, he comes himself and under law, because we have called him, we have invoked him into the world. Two things are necessary to bring the Christ into the world. One, the cosmic date, the fact that the point of overlapping between the age of Pisces and the age of Aquarius has come to a point where the teacher must descend. What is called the fiat of the Lord rings out, and the Christ is called on to descend. The other thing which is needed to bring him into the world is the call from humanity, the invocation from humanity. And throughout the war, and that war, from the point of view of the masters, is from 1914 to 1945, a war which went on in underground in 1918 and came above ground again in 1939. Throughout that war, the cry for help from humanity rose to the Christ and beyond the Christ, and he responded and decided that the time had come. His knowledge of the cosmic date showed him the time had come for him to return to the world. He hoped to be able to come into the world around 1950. It was not to be. But he said he would come, and he made the decision, announced the decision in June 1945, at the end of the war. He said he would come when a measure of peace had been restored to the world. A measure of peace. It didn't have to be total peace everywhere, but a measure of peace in the widest sense. And when the principle of sharing was beginning to govern economic affairs. Sharing is divine. When you share, you recognize God in your brother. He said the first step into sharing is the first step into your divinity. We are gods. Potentially we are gods. We are divine beings, whether we know it or not. But of course we demonstrate very little of that divinity. When we share, we enter for the first time into the correct relationship of man to man. And when I say man, I mean woman, of course, as well. Man to man and man to God. The next step forward, the destined, planned by the deity who ensouls the planet, the next step forward for humanity is the creation of right human relationships. Right relationships between man and man and between man and God. Now, if one person is starving to death in a world of plenty, a world which is burgeoning with food, then you don't have right human relationships. When you have 450 million starving to death, then, of course, you have the very opposite of right human relationships. To take the next step forward in our evolution, we must share. And on that basis rests the whole future of this earth.
Brother's hand and know him as yourself. Take your brother's need as the measure for your action and solve the problems of the world. There is no other cause. Learn to.
Many years ago, the great Spanish poet Federico Garcia Lorca predicted the day that hunger is eradicated from the earth. There will be the greatest spiritual explosion that the world has ever known. Humanity cannot imagine the joy that will burst into the world on the day of that great revolution. We have now seen the world's hunger on television in our own living rooms. Could the fact that we are finally doing something about world hunger mean that Lorca's prediction is coming true, and that a great spiritual teacher is actually returning now to signal the spiritual explosion that was predicted when we end hunger on earth?
Our economic system is totally, utterly corrupt, obscenely corrupt, obscenely unjust. Millions starving to death in the midst of plenty. Millions more, some 800 million people living in a state of total, absolute poverty in the world, grinding out an existence such as we would not allow our pets, our cats and dogs to do. That is what brings the Christ into the world, to change all of that, to show us that we can no longer support what he calls that degradation. 50 million people died last year from starvation in a world with a large surplus of food. 15 million children die every year before they reach the age of 5 from starvation. Millions more die from malnutrition, from the diseases of malnutrition. If you add these figures together, you get the equivalent of a Holocaust like Hiroshima once every 3 days. Add to that those who die from malnutrition, and you get a Hiroshima once every day. 100,000 people die every day from starvation and starvation-related diseases. in a world where if you leave aside all the food, I'm quoting now from statistics given out by the Hunger Project, if you leave aside all the meat, all the dairy produce, all the vegetables, all the fruit, and take only the grains of the world, and divide that among all the people in the world, every man, every woman, and every child would have two large loaves each a day. So just on the grain alone, the whole world could live without any sign of starvation. And yet, each year, these millions die. That division in the world, that blasphemy in the world, is one of the major concerns of the Christ. The decision rests with mankind. We have to decide whether we want these changes which he will advocate. Do we want them?
How can you be content with the molds within which you now live? 1 million star and die.
This is why I have always been searching. In the political scene, spirituality has always been sort of put down. And if you talk about spirituality in politics, people say, what are you talking about? Be serious. Reality is not that easy. Because when you go to a spiritual world or a religious world, both politics or economics or economic world is something that you stay away from. First of all, that the world resources and food has to be shared. Shared, not given like a charity that wealthy nations give to the poor because we got plenty and give some to the poor nations who need them, but share equally. The resources of the world belong to the humanity as a whole. Number of the people who consider themselves really happy will not be that much from the poor nations or people in the poor nations. So if we can trust that we will have a better life and that there is enough food in the world to feed everybody in the world, if we keep that in mind, then we will not be scared, we will not be afraid, oh, we're going to lose everything. And I think it's a great future, and I feel like this is why I am here in this world, to see the kingdom of God in Christian terms, or the nirvana in Buddhist terms, will be manifested in this world.
Now, people all over the world expect the Christ. Christians expect him under that name. They look for the return of Jesus Christ, who came in Palestine and revealed God as love. And the Christ through Jesus promised to come once again at the end of the age, and many of you will know we are now at the end of the age, and the Christ has kept his promise. Now this is seen by many Christian groups as a phenomenon to do only with the Christian religious groups, churches, and so on. Whereas I would try to show that this is not so. The Christ comes as a world teacher for the whole of humanity, and he is awaited by other groups, other religions, just as fervently. They know him by other names. The Jews, of course, know him as the Messiah, and they wait for the Messiah, as they have done for millennia. He came as a Jew in Palestine, and they did not recognize him. He is awaited by the Muslims under the name of the Imam Mahdi, and he is awaited by the Hindus as Krishna. He is awaited by the Buddhists under his real name, Maitreya. They wait for the fifth Buddha, Maitreya Buddha, foretold to come now by the previous Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha.
So how have people in Japan taken to the message?
I use the word Christ, I use the word Maitreya. Maitreya Buddha. In Japanese we call Miroku Bosatsu.
but a lot of Buddhists also know it's a, you know, Miracle Bosatsu is Maitreya.
In the poorest countries in the world, this crime fills me with shame. My brothers, how can you watch these people?
The words to this song are taken from one of the messages from the Christ communicated through Benjamin Krem. Krem gives the information that the Christ is now living amongst the poor in London as an ordinary man, awaiting our invitation into the world. He is here to show us the way out of the present chaos.
Spirituality has to manifest, has to be manifested in politics, in economics, in science, in education. And I just went, hooray, this is how it should be. And the more I read his message and, you know, his compassion and love just permeates from that message. And yet, when you really think about it, he appears as world revolutionary leader to change the world politically, socially, economically, fundamentally changed. And he will be the advocator of that political change, economic and social, fundamental change, and through a spiritual and peaceful means. And this is exactly what I have envisioned. And when I first read his message, it's like tears. I did not have any emotional reaction, and yet tears just start pouring down through my eyes. And it's like, this is what I'm here for.
Has arrived some time ago, and the Christ entered the modern world from the Himalayas, not from some mythical heaven, for he's been postulated as residing by the Christian groups, but from his retreat high in the Himalayan snows, and entered our modern world on the 19th of July, 1977. And from that time has been waiting the opportunity to emerge under law into our midst, without infringing our free will. Now, in 1959, I was contacted for the first time by one of the masters. And very soon afterwards, was contacted by Maitreya himself, introduced by my master. And he gave me to understand that he himself was coming into the world. The preparation for the return of the Christ has been going on for 2,000 years. And has culminated in not only his return to the world, but for the first time in countless thousands of years of his group, the group of which he is the head and leader, the group which the disciples of the masters call the spiritual hierarchy of masters and initiates. The Christ is head of that body of, in the case of the masters, perfected men. Men who have gone ahead of us in evolution, reached the end of this long, apparently endless evolutionary journey in which each one of us is still engaged. Having reached that point, they are free to leave this planet. This planet has nothing further to teach them. But many of these perfected men elect to remain for certain periods, sometimes thousands of years, on the earth to oversee the evolution of the rest of us. They are the custodians of all energies entering this planet, and really, in the very deepest sense, they are the guardians of the planet, the teachers and the guardians and the inspirers of humanity. And they have worked for thousands of years through the agency of their disciples in the world, who are men and women like us in the world. Give me the name of any great man or woman throughout history who has affected powerfully our culture and our civilizations, and you will have given me the name of a initiated disciple of one or other of the masters. All the great ones, the Platos and the Aristotles and the Shakespeare's and the Dante's and the Leonardo's and the Abraham Lincoln's and the Joan of Arc's and the Einsteins and the Schweitzer's, All these great, powerfully effective men and women in the world have done their work through the inspiration and guidance of the masters from behind the scenes. The masters have lived themselves in the remote mountain and desert areas of the world since Atlantean days. They are to be found, when they are found, and they are found only by those who have a right to find them, in the Andes, in the Rockies, in the Cascades, in the Carpathians, in the Urals, the Atlas, the Himalayas, and various other mountain and desert areas of the world. From those retreats, often high in the snows, they have overseen, beneficently overseen, our gradual expansion of consciousness, which has brought us from a stage of early animal man up to the point where we now find ourselves, which you might feel is not very high at all, given the state of the world at present. But compared with early animal man, an Einstein or an Abraham Lincoln is a very, very great achievement of the human race. Well, we're not all Einsteins or Abraham Lincolns, but nevertheless, the broad general level of humanity is now so advanced that the masters of the wisdom can perform an event which they have been rehearsing and preparing for over 500 years, their return to the everyday world, to live among us, known to us at last for who they are in their own full spiritual potency, to act as the guides, the teachers, the inspirers of humanity in this coming age, the age of Aquarius, which is just dawning. And just before the end of the gospel story, before the crucifixion, if you remember, the Christ sent his disciples into the town of Jerusalem and told them that there they would find a man carrying a pitcher of water on his shoulders. He told them to follow that man to a house and there prepare the feast of the Passover. In that apparently insignificant vignette, he foreshadowed his future role as the teacher, the avatar, for the age of Aquarius. The man carrying the water pot, of course, is the age-old symbol for Aquarius. And look at the world into which he has come. A world which is divided terribly, dangerously, in mainly two ways, politically and economically. East and West, North and South. The East-West division, the political division, is obvious. The world is divided into two armed camps. The NATO countries, America and her allies, and the Soviet bloc, Russia and her allies. And that is the political reality in the world today. Two armed camps with a nuclear arsenal which can destroy all life many times over. That political impasse which we're witnessing, that dangerous situation East and West, is tied up with another equally dangerous situation which may not be so familiar to you. That is the division between the North Nations and the South Nations, the developed world and the third world. The tensions inherent in the discrepancy between our different standards of living have within it the seeds of a third world war. At the moment, we in the West, the developed world, usurp and waste 3/4 of the world's food. At least 80%, rather more, of the world's raw materials, resources, energy sources, and of course all the scientific, technical know-how of the world. The third world must make do, 2/3 of the world's population must make do with the rest. 1/4 of the world's food. Not more than 15 to 20% of the world's resources and energy, and of course none of the scientific know-how of the world. Some of you are becoming more and more familiar with the true situation in the third world. When I first started coming to America, which was January 1980,
my first tour, I found an absolute, almost total lack of concern for the Third World, a total ignorance about the state of play in the world between the developed world and the Third World, a total ignorance about the number of people hungry and even starving to death in the Third World. Suddenly, there is a new situation. The famine in Ethiopia has focused the eyes of the world on the situation in the world. He hopes by his presence, physical presence in the world, to stimulate the process of change, which is already underway, to galvanize humanity into accepting a sense of responsibility for its brothers and sisters in the Third World. That's his first priority. He does not come in the first place as a religious teacher, and those who look for him as that will not recognize him. He is an educator in the broadest sense of the word. It is indeed a spiritual crisis through which humanity is now going. That spiritual crisis is focused through the political and economic field. Hence the ferment in every country of the world as it adjusts itself to the impact of the new energies and seeks to get rid of the hindrance of the old decaying structures, the old political and economic structures which hold humanity back from expressing its true spirituality. And when I say spiritual, I don't mean necessarily religious. The Christ will show that every aspect of our life can be and must be spiritual. That the religious path is only one path. That the spiritual path, the path to God, to achieved spirituality, is broad enough, wide enough, varied enough to accommodate all people, the religious person and the non-religious person. And in every aspect of our life, in every field of endeavor, moment to moment, that which we can call God can be experienced and expressed through all our many different occupations and concerns, religious, political, economic, social, scientific, artistic, and so on. All those paths equally are divine and lead to the divine. Now, events such as in Ethiopia or Biafra, India, and so on, are disease spots of a diseased entity, which is this planet at this moment. The only cure for that disease is the acceptance of the principle of sharing, the redistribution of the resources of the world more equitably around the world. That is the solution which the Christ will posit and present to the world as the only way out of this dangerous impasse.
Fue una experiencia bastante clara para mí de la reaparición de Cristo.
It was a very clear experience of the reappearance of the Christ.
Investigué en el ARRA acerca de Benjamin Graham y estuve con él hace dos meses en Londres.
Okay, I did some investigation work in regards to Ben Graham, and I was... ¿Estuviste ahí dos?
Hace dos meses.
She was there 2 months ago.
En la entrevista en su casa, él nos dio un abrazo muy bonito, muy fuerte.
In the at the interview at his house, we had an overshadowing, and it was very beautiful.
Su rostro se iluminó completamente.
El rostro de quién?
De Benjamin Graham.
Okay, Benjamin's face appeared to me very clearly.
Y se iluminó todo el cuarto con una luz dorada muy intensamente.
And the whole room was lit up with a golden light, very brilliant.
He dicho a todas las personas mis experiencias tanto en la India como con Benjamin Graham.
I've told people of my experience of what happened in India as well as with Benjamin Graham.
Y ellos están esperando que yo dé más noticias acerca de
And they're all looking forward to for what I have to say of the Christ.
Espero regresar a México dando nuevas noticias.
During this experience, I've learned a lot, and I plan to go back to Mexico to relay my experiences.
In England and through them abroad know who they're dealing with. Their problem has been to see him fully, completely, in their sense of the Christ. Because
if they're Christians, they probably imagine he's sitting up on a cloud, and you know, the right hand of God somewhere up in a place called heaven, you know. And so they've had a certain difficulty, but he has given them an extraordinary number of experiences which would prove to you and to me that he is the Christ. And they are a bit divided. There are those who are ready and willing to go ahead and make an announcement. There are those who are counseling caution. But they have agreed on a modus operandi by which they have agreed with him, and he has accepted it as perfectly suitable, to make a statement that a man claiming to be the Christ, no more than that, a man claiming to be the Christ, does indeed live in the Asian community, the Pakistani community in London. But he presents himself as a world teacher for all groups, religious and otherwise. That he wishes to meet with the media representatives of all the nations precisely in order to present his credentials. And if he is invited to do so, to address the whole of humanity in the linked television channels in such a way as would convince the world of his true status. And in fact, from my contacts in the community, it would appear that he's already not waiting. He's going ahead anyway. And very short, people will emerge in different continents who have had a certain experience, all of them the same, all of them relating to one man, that one man who is now living as an ordinary man in London, waiting to be accepted by the world as the Christ. So when he started the process, it is a process, and I may not give you the details of it, but the process is such that individuals in more than one continent will come forward having had a particular experience, and that experience they will show relates to one man, and that one man is the Christ. And so many will have had this that it will focus it absolutely on this individual now living in London who is indeed the Christ. Then he will be invited to speak to the whole world. There will be no gainsaying. And this is so positive, this is so valuable, so beneficial for humanity, that the idea that this could be the Antichrist, some maleficent force which the fundamentalist Christians are inclined to think, those who believe me at all, they will not have a leg to stand on. It is so beneficial that the world will not believe he is other than the Christ.
I guess I don't have a real intellectual answer. I have read Reappearance of the Christ and have thought about it, and there's nothing that I can say that really proves it for me on an intellectual level. It's just something that in my own intuition feels right. It's felt right for me when I've listened to the messages of the Maitreya. It feels very right to me, and it's really something that I want to hear and need to hear. And if this whole thing ended up being a hoax, I don't feel that I've lost anything.
But the reason that has me most believe that the Christ is in the world and is the logic of what Benjamin has had to say, and the logic of the background material that I've studied. I studied to be a minister, and at that time I studied all the world's religions, and honestly, none of them really make any sense to me. None of them, and this work does.
Well, the things make sense to me. The ideas that are put forth and the reasons why the Christ would be in the world make sense, and things do fit together. The events that are happening in the world, the interest in hunger, the concern that people have for one another that has developed over the past 5 years is just too overwhelming to not recognize it as something that is connected with something larger.
I felt like a child at Christmas, that I had waited for this so long that it was hard to believe he was actually here, and I was really hearing this, and the energy that I felt from this man and the light that I saw around him was more of a conviction to me that this must be true.
It was nearly 5 years ago that I first heard of Benjamin Krem. And then I proceeded to meet him, and when I met him and received the vibrations and the consciousness, the sincerity, the humility of this man, it's thoroughly convincing.
Hi, Brad.
Hi, Sam.
You talked about a part of you being brought out by doing this work.
I found that involvement in this work has enabled me to remain idealistic and optimistic about the future of humanity. I've never had some of the profound experiences that many people have had, you know, during Ben's lectures, no visions of the Christ, you know, no no reception of the so-called laser beam. But perhaps maybe what I've gained more importantly for myself is a realization, a reminder that we're all in this boat together, all of us, humanity, and that we all need to work together along whatever, you know, line we can from whatever point we are, and that no little bit of work is too small.
The next step forward, the destined plan, planned by the deity who ensouled the planet, the next step forward for humanity is the creation of right human relationships. Right relationships between man and man and between man and God. Now, if one person is starving to death in a world of plenty, a world which is burgeoning with food, then you don't have right human relationships. When you have 450 million starving to death, then, of course, you have the very opposite of right human relationships. To take the next step forward in our evolution, we must share. And on that basis rests the whole future of this earth. That is the nature, perhaps in more eloquent words, that is the nature of the choice which the Christ will present to humanity on the Day of Declaration. On the Day of Declaration, which I believe to be imminent, he will make a great appeal to humanity. He will present us with two choices, which really are hardly choices at all. One, to continue as we are and destroy ourselves. Continue on this greedy, selfish, nationalistic, confronting way of acting and destroy ourselves. Or else, as I say, accept the principle of sharing and create a civilization such as this world has never known. And he says, my heart tells me your answer, your choice, and is glad. So he knows already, even if humanity itself doesn't know, that we have inwardly accepted the principle of sharing. He cannot simply wave a wand and say, there will be no war. Please, God, don't let it happen. He can't do that. It's up to us. We are, as a race, grown up. Humanity has come of age. We are grown up and have to make our own decisions. And he comes, he says, as the architect only of the plan. We, he says, are the willing builders of the temple of truth. Every step of the way has to be taken by man himself. Now, under the inspiration, openly, outwardly, it has always been there from the inner sense, but openly and outwardly from the Christ and his disciples, the masters of wisdom. On our decision, as I say, rests the whole future of the world, and he believes it will be positive. He said, have no fear that mankind will reject me. My plans are safe in your hands. But we have to know where we stand in relationship to the principle of sharing. Are we ready individually for the principle of sharing? This principle is a very difficult principle for, I have found, a lot of people in the West to accept. Because they believe they have to give up something. But all we have to give up is our greed, our selfishness, our need to have an enormous surplus so we feel secure. In America, and not only America, all the major nations, all the developed nations have this mentality. And so they store food, they store materials, always against the eventuality of war. On that day, the Day of Declaration, you will see this extraordinary man on your television. But he will not speak. He will not say a word. His ideas, his thoughts, will enter silently into each of our minds in our own language. So in England, we will hear him in English. Here, you will hear him in what you like to call English. At the same time, the French will hear him in French, the Germans in Germans, the Russians in Russians, the Chinese in Chinese, and so on and so on. From his omniscience, his omnipresence, the Christ will mentally overshadow the whole of humanity simultaneously and make his appeal, his call in this way. And this is a repetition, on, of course, now on a worldwide scale, of what actually happened at the Pentecost 2,000 years ago. wherever you are on that day, say it was 3 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time on Sunday, whatever, it will be different times, of course, different parts of the world, but wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you will hear the thoughts, the ideas of the Christ in your head. And of course, our response to that will determine the whole future of the world. That is one time it were would be useful to watch television. I can promise you a good program that day. Can you imagine the effect, the results of such a communication? Simultaneously, hundreds of thousands of spontaneous miracle cures will take place all over the world, which will reinforce, if that were even necessary, that this one, and of course only this one, is indeed the Christ. The days of the false Christ, the days of the false teachings, the false prophecies, the days of the false prognostications, the impersonations and so on of the Christ will be over. Many groups today believe their teacher to be the Christ, their guru, their teacher. The world is filled with them. They write to me all the time, they telephone me, they come to my door. The Christian groups are spreading their message of hate. That is the sad thing. It is a message of hatred, of division, of separation into the world, the more fundamentalist ones. While in the church itself, the broader church, there is a ferment of change going on. The churches are among the most concerned today in the Holocaust, which is taking place in the third world, the starving millions. Recently, the head of Christian Aid in England resigned from the post. His name is Charles Elliot. He was in an underground train in London, and a man came up to him. A man, he said, of an extraordinary man, a man whose brilliance of his eyes and stature and presence were so compelling that when the man said to him, "Come with me," he left the train with him. He just got off the train and walked out onto the platform. And that man said to him, "Christian Aid is doing a lot, but it must do much, 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 much more." So he resigned from Christian Aid in order to devote himself to galvanize the governments and so on into taking seriously, in a total sense, the fact of the starving millions. That man was one of the masters. That man who met him is the master in London. There is a master in London, there's one in New York, and now about 12 masters living in the world, as yet undeclared, after the Day of Declaration. Christ will introduce to the world that first group of 12 masters, and then eventually, one by one, two by two, over about 25 years yet, the masters of the hierarchy will enter into our midst and take us by the hand, so to say, into the new age, to guide us and help us in creating that truly spiritual civilization, based on the true spiritual nature, identity of man. That age, that future, that divinity is, I believe, just beginning. This Day of Declaration I believe now to be so imminent, I'm happy to have had the opportunity of presenting you with these facts.
Many times have you heard me say that my coming means change, specifically the greatest change will be in the hearts and minds of men. For my return among you is a sign that men are ready to receive new life.